Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast, episode 52. And if I did this every week, I'd have a year's worth of podcasts. That's a lot. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. What's up, Internet? This is the Rare is Fundamental Podcast, episode 52, recorded on April 27, 2016, brought to you by Rare.net and syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. I am Ray Moraldi, also known as Ray Ray. So, most people know me as an NBA online writer, so this podcast pertains to a lot of NBA talk, but this podcast is called Rare is Fundamental, so that means I talk about whatever I want. Basically, the fundamentals of life. Normally, I talk about whatever subject that comes to mind with my friends who are mostly sports personalities. This time around, I talk NBA playoffs with James Holas, also known as Snotty Drippin' on Twitter. And we also kind of go over celebrity worship, which is kind of prevalent in this culture. It's kind of depressing, really, where we just, like, I don't know, get down on our knees for our favorite celebrities. So we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. I'm not going to delay this any further, so let's go ahead and talk basketball with James Holas. Snotty Drippin. Meet me at Temecula. Scratch. Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 52. I'm Ray Moraldi, also known as Ray Ray, recording on April 27, 2016. I am joined by my old friend, old co-podcaster, writes for Bebo Breakdown, and kind of a Twitter celebrity at this point, really, because we just saw his video on ESPN, like, last week. Snotty Drippin'. Or should we call you by your real name now?
Yeah, we could probably do that now. I think it's clear. You can call me James Holas. But, you know what? Let's, real quick.
Yeah.
This grinds my gears. You ready? I can't stand being called a Twitter celeb. It just sounds, I know you don't mean it that way. It just sounds, it sounds so pretentious, and it makes me feel.
Oh,
it makes me feel like a douchebag, a bigger douchebag than I already am. So,
I totally get you, man. It's like you're just basically like I'm not saying this to like you know lessen you or whatever, but you're just one of the guys. You know, you're just like one of the guys who just writes basketball, and you're very respected in your opinions. Even though, yeah, I see a lot of quote unquote haters out there, but really, like people respect you for your opinions. Like I respect your opinion. You know,
I appreciate you saying that because a lot of people don't respect my opinions. I'm pretty much, like, hated and disgusted for my opinion, so I appreciate you saying
that. Well, I remember you, like, a few years ago, I warned you about being, you're so abrasive sometimes, and now you've kind of calmed down on that. What the heck happened, man? You're getting soft in your old age.
I've actually, like, you know, like, throttled back, can't calm down, and people hate me more than ever. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I don't know, it's so weird. Like, let me bring this up really quick, because I remember you mentioning this on the video on ESPN. And we live in a society where it's like people are so worshipped, like celebrity worship. And I do think it's crazy, too. Like, I agree with you on that. Like, whenever Kanye West does something or Drake does something or the Kardashians do something, and it's like suddenly the whole world's all over it. It's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, it's a little sad, but you know what? I guess social media makes it possible, you know, for us to follow the moves of our every hero. And some of our heroes know that, and they package things, and they sell to the lowest common denominator, and people just eat it up, you know what I'm saying? So it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always been like that. We just don't see it because, I mean, back then they would write letters to the celebrities, right, instead of, like, sending a tweet or a Facebook message or whatever. It's just that the world's smaller now, you know?
Yeah, you make a good point, man. And like before, you couldn't follow your favorite celebrity all day long on Twitter and know everything they did on Instagram. You know, before, yeah, it was, all right, you see them on, like, you know, that Entertainment Weekly or something, all right, and you love it. Now it's like you got 24/7 access to these people.
Yeah, it's like it'd be like in a Hoop magazine or Sports Illustrated, like once a month or every 2 weeks or whatever. And now it's like they're on your fingertips now. And it's kind of scary, too, right?
It's nuts, man. And I don't know if you remember, that movie Idiocracy? Did you watch that movie?
I never watched it, but tell me about it.
It's a must watch, man, because it's very satirical. It's kind of cheesy, but basically, you know, the guy goes, I don't know, 500 years in the future, where all the kind of the people who watch the Kardashians and stuff, they bred like rabbits, and all the educated people were busy, like, chasing educational stuff and, like, you know, have one or two kids. Well, the real morons were just breeding like rabbits. And so in the future, of course, the world's overrun by morons. And that's the basis of the movie, man. And it's kind of scary because, I mean...
We're kind of heading towards that, right?
I don't want to say that, man, but who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of get, like, we're always going to be... I don't want to say worship, but we're always going to admire somebody for their craft, whether it's Hollywood or athletics or whatever. But I just think this is just too much, you know? It's like, I get it, they inspire you to work harder in life and stuff like that, but I just think it gets to a point where it's just like, oh my God, I will die for you. Oh, by the way, die, you made fun of Kobe.
Exactly. You know what I mean? I mean, there are people who go get surgery to look like Kim Kardashian, who is famous for just being famous. That's all she's famous for, you know? Or so it's you know what? Let's. I'm glad we share a love of basketball. I'm glad we can talk about that too. So that made me sad right now talking about this.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but see, people don't notice like your deep hatred for Kobe Bryant, right? But it's like you're a Celtics fan, so of course you're gonna hate the guy, right? But now that he's retired, do you have some kind of respect for the guy?
I said this his last game, man. I gave him his respect because he put on a show that last game. And I think I said this in the video, too. It's not so much Kobe that I hate, even though, you know, I think he's a little, he's a little overhyped by and a little bit overrated by his big fans and some of the talking heads on TV. And that's just, I don't have him in my top five. You know, he's my top 12, top 15. That's
huge, man. Seriously.
Well, like, I think, too, but people get upset with me when I say that's my whole point about him being overrated. I respect his will. I respect the fact that the man is. I kind of respect it, but I mean, he's obviously like kind of psychotic, and he channeled it in a way that wasn't harmful to anybody. That's good, but it's not good to go out there and play 48 minutes a night until you blow out your Achilles. That's not normal.
Right.
It's kind of weird, and that's what he did. You know, I read the Baxter Holmes. Run up to his Achilles when he literally wouldn't let him take him out of games, you know.
Yeah.
So I have a weird respect for that. I respect the fact that he made himself into he literally just worked himself to be one of the best players of all time. I mean, hard work, and he's talented obviously, but he worked really hard to be where he is. And that last game, I was cheering for him because he went nuts the last 3 or 4 minutes. That he brought me out of my seat too. So, but all in all, I'm ready for him to go.
But on record, we have Snotty Griffin saying he respects Kobe. Got it.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about the playoffs, man. Like, the West turned upside down in, like, 24 hours, basically. Like, right now, Golden State is going against Houston in Game 5, and Clippers Blazers is going on Game 5. But the thing is now, Golden State's lost Stephen Curry for a couple of weeks, maybe more. And now the Clippers have lost Blake Griffin and Chris Paul for the playoffs. So, tell me your forecast for the West, man. Like, it's just... all upside down now.
Well, and this is why that the saying is that's why we play the game. And everyone says a foregone conclusion, that Golden State was going to win it all. Hey, just how many games is it going to take? Are they going to lose again in the playoffs? But, I mean, this is why we play the games. And it sucks that injuries can have that much bearing on it. But, hey, KD missed, because of KD, OKC missed the playoffs last year. You know, it's part of the game and it's a part that we all hate. But this is what it is. Now, I think Golden State is still, their margin for error is a lot thinner now, but because they have the Rockets, and because I think Portland's going to come back now and beat the Clippers. The Clippers obviously are not, they're in no shape to really make a deep run now.
Yeah.
But Portland's going to extend that series even longer now, so it's going to be 6 or 7 games. It's given Steph Curry more time to come back.
Right.
And I think even as is, Golden State is probably right there. They got to be the favorites over Portland, even as is. Steph Curry comes back halfway through that series and gets his legs back. There's no harm, no foul, really. So they still, I think, are right there. I think San Antonio has to kind of be licking their chops a little bit. Nobody wants to see a player like Steph Curry go down, but at the same time, it's fortuitous for them because they've been considered, all season, hey, second best team in the league. MVP goes down, then it's a whole new ballgame. OKC has to have a better glimmer of hope because they were, two teams down for the finals. And now, if Golden State's weakened and Steph Curry doesn't come back 100%, there's a good chance, So
yeah, let's talk about that though. Stephen Curry, like if he comes back, he's probably not going to be his pre-injury self. He's not going to be the guy that was shooting 400 three-pointers all season. He's going to be probably even 50%. Because knee injuries are funny, man.
And not just that, though. I think I was arguing about this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There's no workout for an NBA player better than playing NBA games.
Right.
He's going to be down with a bad knee for 2 weeks, at least, I watched the announcement, until they can even evaluate him for basketball activity. So it might be longer. Yeah. No matter what, he can ride the bike, he can, you know, go on walks, whatever. He's not going to be in game shape for a hot minute. And even when he comes back, he has to work himself back in shape and get back in rhythm. So even when he comes back, it's going to be quite a few games probably until he's Steph Curry again, if he's 100% healthy.
Also,
yeah, like you said, you hit the nail on the head, man. Everything's up in the air right now with Golden State a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So now Oklahoma City, like, we pretty much counted them out, and I'm sure Kevin Durant's mad about that because we're all about Golden State and San Antonio this entire season. But now you gotta get some props to Oklahoma City now. Like, they went through Dallas, and now they have a pretty good chance of beating San Antonio. And then if they go against the weekend Golden State, they're as good a team as any to get to the NBA Finals.
I want to agree with you, and maybe I'm just it's the pessimist in me because I picked OKC is my favorite for like the last 2 or 3 years, you know. Of course, not last year because of injuries, but you know, I kept thinking and injuries kept knocking them off. But just watching them against Dallas this year, I watched them really close and I wrote a lot about them, their series. I did all the recaps and analysis from their series for B-Ball Breakdown. That's a shameless plug. You got to go check that out. And I noticed a lot of little things. They still are very undisciplined defensively at times. They still have trouble when they blow rotations. They don't bring 100% effort every, you know, as I say, maybe 20% of the time, they're just kind of reacting instead of acting on defense. And those kind of things, yeah, they beat Dallas pretty handily, but, you know, that's why Dallas was in every game except for the one, like, except for the two blowouts, but they're in every other game, and they won a game. So my thing with them is San Antonio is going to punish them. Every mistake you make, San Antonio is going to take full advantage. They're going to punish you. Every blown rotation, every time that you collapse and don't get back to your man, they're going to take advantage of it. So I still worry about them. I know KD and Russ are awesome, but I'm a little concerned about them still.
Do you think they've regressed just a little bit because of Billy Donovan? Because I see the offense is basically the same thing as Scott Brooks. It's a lot of standing around, a lot of isolation, and their defense has regressed with Billy Donovan. Don't you think?
I agree. I agree that Billy – I think – I'm sorry, OKC fans, but maybe long-term Billy Donovan would work out. I think as of right now, he's not the right coach. Because I think he's a little too conservative. I've actually noticed that they go through stretches where the ball really does move. It really hums.
And it's the same thing with Scott Brooks.
I'll say even more. And I've noticed, like, I saw they ran this play the other day that had like 2 or 3 misdirections and it ended up getting somebody a wide open layup. Scott Brooks wouldn't have run that. I give it to him. He's trying to add wrinkles. And some of it's not his fault. I mean, the roster's kind of been the way it's been for years, the core. It's really hard to get, you know, 7-8 year vets to change their stripes. It is. At the same time, like you said, the defense is falling apart. Offensively, they still fall back to the ISO. And if you watch the first round, which I know you did, Kevin Durant, his touch is gone right now. You know, he's been guarded by 6'5 Wes Matthews, and he shot, I think, 27% from three in the first round.
Yeah.
Now he
went 7 for 33 in game 2.
Oh, yeah. Worst shooter in his career in game 2. So it's like, you know, now you have Kawhi Leonard, who's the best perimeter defender in the league, waiting for you. I'm a little concerned about his scoring touch right now.
Yeah, but the Spurs have always had trouble with the Thunder's length.
That's very true, but now they have length of their own. You know, Kawhi is being featured. LaMarcus is being featured. I think we all said this beforehand, the lack of depth in San Antonio might catch up with them a little bit, but Boris Diaw was so good off that bench. Patty Mills is hitting threes off the bench. If Danny Green and LaMarcus Aldridge are hot, it's going to be really hard for San Antonio. I mean, for OKC.
Yeah, and oh my God, like Oklahoma City they've just been struck with bad luck the last 3 years, and now I think, don't you think Serge Ibaka's plateaued at this point? Like, he can't get any better than how he is now.
I agree, and I all season long, I think I wrote something about this too. That he was kind of the problem when they went that little swoon. They lost 8-12. It was on him because he wasn't playing well at all. Now in the first round, he played amazing. He was lights out. And I saw somebody tweet, "Hey, if Serge wants to coast all season and play this in playoffs, I'll take it." So now let's see how he matches up with LaMarcus. LaMarcus is not a strong defender either, so Serge should get a lot of good looks. OKC is the best, you know, rebounding team in the playoffs right now. They smash him on the boards, and this is going to be really interesting, man. Really, I'm really excited to see this series kick off.
Yeah, and one more thing, like I remember Ibaka asking for touches one time during the season. Like he said that, you know, Westbrook and Durant hold on to the ball for like 8 minutes. He does not get any touches. He didn't complain about that, sort of. So
yeah, he was sending little subliminal shots. You know, hey, sometimes it's hard when I play so hard on defense and then I stand in the corner for 8 minutes and don't see the ball.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a few cracks showing. And I don't know if you remember, Doc Rivers said this, his own team, but he mentioned OKC. He goes, sometimes teams get stale. It just runs its course. And he named off OKC and Dallas. And honestly, I can see where that's coming from. This next round will go really far to saying, like, you know, what the future of OKC is going to be.
What about the Clippers? They're kind of in that threshold too, because everyone's saying like maybe you should break this core up if they can't get it done this year. And this year is pretty much a lost season right now.
It is, and it's, you know what, I saw a lot of articles today about the Clippers curse. And those players don't believe in it. I know everybody wants to say it's not real, but this is just like, this is the worst case scenario for them, man. This is supposed to be the year when, you know, they made a push. They're playing with house money because Golden State and San Antonio are supposed to be so much better than everybody else, which they are. And for both of their stars to go down in one game and be lost in the playoffs is just, it's a tremendous blow. So the Doc said it today. I read about it. He said he's thinking about, you know, in the offseason we have to review. Do we stay with the same core and come back, or is it time to start making some moves? And let me ask you now. Let me turn to the interviewer. So if you're Doc Rivers as the GM and the coach, and it comes down from the owner, and you guys decide, hey, we gotta shake this up. Who are you trying to move?
Wow, that's tough. The thing is Chris Paul keeps getting hurt in the playoffs every year, which is playoffs. Yeah, but it's funny though. Like it happens every season. With the Clippers, like, there's something ailing with him. And he's 31 years old as well. So, this is a toss-up for me. Would I want to... I might want to trade Paul for somebody else, because Griffin can still... I still think he can get better, especially since people have said that Griffin's game has been limited a little bit because Chris Paul has the ball more.
Yeah.
So why not expand Blake's game a little bit more? Let's trade Chris Paul for someone. I don't know for who, but, you know, I'm going for a younger guy here.
When you say people have said it, I've said that. I really believe that as good as Chris Paul is as a point guard, he is just that dominant personality. And I said the other day, he's kind of like what Rondo wishes he was, because he actually makes the teams better, and he can score himself. But he dominates the ball so much, he does marginalize Blake Griffin just a little bit.
Yeah, my brother said that too. So I'm like, people, you know? But I believe I heard you say that before as well in my old podcast. But that's the thing. Like, I want to see Blake Griffin expand his game a little bit more, and he's younger. And I think Chris Paul at this point is going to be on a downhill slope, next year, 2 years from now. And Chris Paul is also a free agent after next season. So there's that.
You know what, man? And that's the funny thing. I see a lot of people say, well, you can get more for Blake, which is true, because, you know, I think he's definitely, you know, like I said, younger. I think his game has more, you know, more room to grow, obviously. But like, why wouldn't you keep the better player and trade the lesser player, the less asset? You know, if Blake is, I mean, honestly, it's easier to build around Blake than it is around Chris Paul. So why wouldn't you keep Blake? That's my thing on it, so.
Yeah. Blake Griffin has an option out after next year, so... Really, they could both be free agents, but I would like to see them give it one more shot on next year, and risk losing Chris Paul or do some sign and trade or whatever after next year if it doesn't work out. But I think they just kind of get robbed this year, and I think they should give it one more shot next year. So, what do you think?
I'm in the opposite camp, man, and I know it's hard, and you know once you get a team that's in the upper echelon, it sounds silly to say we'll just break it up, but you know it's. I really think that Chris Paul, that he might just need a fresh start. And I know he wants to win his championship, so, you know, try to work something out with him where he wants to go. Bring in some nice young talent, like younger talent and some picks, and tell Blake, hey, listen, this year, you know, we're in a holding pattern this year, but next year we're going to go all in and get you everything you need. Whatever you got to do. But, Blake and DeAndre, hell, you can find a home for DeAndre, you know, probably not though, but yeah, Blake and DeAndre, I'd move forward with those two.
It's funny because, like, we're saying this now about the Clippers in Oklahoma City, where it's like, oh, they've overstayed their welcome, but there have been some teams that have been successful over a long period of time. The Pistons from 2000 to 2008 until they traded Chauncey Billups. They were there for, like, eight years.
Yeah,
yeah. The Utah Jazz, Karl Malone, John Stockton, for 19 years, really, you know, until Malone went to the Lakers. And, of course, the Dallas Mavericks with Dirk Nowitzki. We thought they were pretty much over the hill by 2010, 2011, then they win a title. So, I don't know, you know?
Like I said, it's really easy for us to sit here in our chairs, you know, eating pita chips and make these calls, but we're talking multi-million-dollar franchises. You don't want to give up talent like that and say, hey, we're, you know, stick around or bust, all right, let's go home. I get it, but at the same time, I mean, Dirk, guess what? He was a singular star. They brought pieces in around him every year until they found the fit. Yeah, it could be Blake Griffin. The Pistons, they won their championship, you know, and they made it so deep in the playoffs. You're right there. They're contenders. Do you really think the Clippers are contenders? So.
Yeah. Plus, they haven't made the West Finals yet. That's another thing, too. Like, how long are they going to go with this crew that can't even get past the Western Conference semifinals? You know? Yeah. At least the Thunder have been there before.
Exactly. So let me ask you, what do you think right now? What do you think of the criticism of Chris Paul when people are like, oh, you know, he hasn't made past the second round, so therefore he's overrated or he's a choke artist? What do you respond to that for him?
The thing is, it's like, it's still all about teams, right? Like, no matter what, he's still one of the best in history. Like, are we going to penalize John Stockton for, you know, not winning the NBA Finals? It's pretty much the same thing. Like, you lost in the playoffs. Same thing with Steve Nash. You waited to the West Finals. That's it. Like, so what, though? I mean, it's still on your entire team to get it done, not just one person.
You know what's so funny about that, man, is that, like, the goalposts move according to how you feel about the player. You know?
Yeah.
You say that for Chris Paul, and it's absolutely true. But, like, we don't kill John Stockton and Karl Malone. We consider them the greatest ever. But you know, Chris Paul loses to these great teams every year. I think there's only like one year he should have won. The one of those Memphis series is the one that. And then, of course, you know, last year was a pretty epic choke job. It was. It hurt.
Yeah.
Versus legacy, right? But other than that, I mean, they've lost to better teams. And he still get even before last year, he was getting ripped as, oh, he can't win the big game. Well, I mean, he loses to better players. What do you want him to do?
Yeah, and better teams, really, because they have more stars than the other, right?
Exactly.
I mean, That's how you are in the present, because I'm sure John Stockton and Karl Malone got that treatment in 1995 or whatever, you know? By the time he retires, we're going to say, oh, yeah, Chris Paul's one of the best in the game.
Well, I'm going to say a little different. You know why? Because, I mean, they get the ultimate pass because they lost to Michael Jordan. They lost to the greatest of all time. So all those players, I think, from, like, the mid-90s, we don't call them really, like, you know, oh, they couldn't. No, they lost to MJ. They lost to the GOAT, you know? So it's a little different. But, yeah, it's true. Like, it's all about your perception of the player, how you award them passes or not.
I mean, what about the Knicks? Like, they lost to the Rockets. I mean, we forget that. I mean, we can say they lost to the Bulls multiple times, but they made it to the finals in 94, and they lost to the Rockets.
I mean,
that's not an MJ excuse right there.
It's not, but that's when, I mean, we got the highlight reel. Hakeem put everybody in the spin cycle that year. So,
yeah.
That's, I mean, people still to this day say, hey, even if Mike Hatton left, they don't think that he could beat Hakeem and company that year, because Hakeem was on another level.
I really wish that series happened, Rockets and Bulls. It never did, unfortunately. I would have loved to see it, because, yeah, you're right, Olajuwon was on another level. Like, he was like, you know how you were saying, like, Dirk how was in 2011, where he carried the Dallas Mavericks? Yeah. That's what Olajuwon was in 94.
Hakeem just hit that next level. But, dude, I was watching footage of Dirk the other day again in that run. It's almost like some kind of a video game.
It's sick.
It was ridiculous. I mean, hand in his face, falling down, getting fouled. It didn't matter. If you give him an ounce of room, it's wet. The jumper was down, and Hakeem was the exact same way. You called it.
I mean, of course, 95, you had Clyde Drexler's help, but at the same time, that team won 47 games. Like, we never thought of us, like, going past the first round, and they beat, like, everybody.
like handily too. It was ridiculous.
He got on Hakeem's back, and Hakeem just worked out everybody, every center in front of him. He gave the business to.
This is Adam Jacoby, and if you're looking for a morality play, check out Ray Ray is Fundamental.
NBA ho.
Guys, let me remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show on Stitcher as well as RareRay.net. And this show is being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. You can follow the podcast Twitter at RareRayIsFun. They only allow 16 characters, so you couldn't put RareRayIsFundamental. You can also follow my personal Twitter at TheNoLookPass. Visit my NBA site at TheNoLookPass.com. And you can also check out my other podcast. It's wrestling related. It's called the TJR Wrestling Podcast, hosted by me and John Kenton at TJRWrestling.net. And by the way, before I go on, you can follow Snotty Drippin, James Holas, on Twitter at Snotty Drippin, SnottieDrippen. I hope you can spell. And you can follow my co-host on the Kicking It Old School with Ray Ray and EJ at EJ Christian 7. We're done? We're done. Let's go.
This is Harrison Fagan from Silver Screen and Roll. You're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Do you miss those times with the centers dominating?
In a way I do, because like I said, we can watch the footage and it's just like it's poetry in motion. But it shifted from the inside to the outside, and Steph Curry does amazing things with basketball. Russell Westbrook does amazing things with the basketball. Kevin Durant is just, 7 foot in the perimeter doing amazing things with basketball. So it's different, but I think it's just evolution, right? It's just the game is changed, and I see a lot of people. I actually know a guy at work. He says, I can't watch basketball anymore. It's too this, it's too that. Well, yeah, you're holding to a standard that just doesn't exist anymore,
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this with Zach Harper a long time ago. It's like 90s basketball. Like, people miss 90s basketball when, in reality, 90s basketball was horrible. the great teams were great, but the rest of the league was kind of bad.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people, too. I mean, I miss the days, but then I'll go watch, like, a game or, half on YouTube, and I'm like, this is pretty boring. Yeah. So, yeah, it's true. I think, we have nostalgia moments, but for the most part, basketball, I think, is better than maybe it's ever been.
Yeah. Because there's a lot more perimeter play, which we wanted back in the day. Like, I wish you could see more guards and forwards thrive and stuff like that. We would wish for that back in the day. And now that it's happening, suddenly there's this way of nice nostalgia on basketball, which is funny to me.
The hilarious part to me is when, Isaiah Thomas kind of gave that little weird punch thing in the head to Dennis Schroeder the other day, and people are like, this was the 90s. That's nothing. That's not a foul. Well, I mean, I don't want to see players punching and, I want to see them play basketball.
Yeah. You know what's hilarious to me? When Pat Beverly plays really rough, we know that, his physicality and everything, and then the same people that are like, yeah, 90s basketball, are like hating Patrick Beverly for being physical. Like, that's kind of hypocritical.
Again, all about perception, because he does it against the players they like. They don't want to see him be physical with Steph Curry and be physical with Dame Lillard. They want to see him, so it's all about perception, man. It's funny how point of view can change even in the same situation. Yeah, people, I want to see physical, knock him down. Then Pat Beverly knocks down their favorite player, and he can't do that. What a player.
That's so funny to me. Let's shift to the East, where we just saw, a pretty good finish between the Heat and the Hornets. Are you shocked the Hornets are up 3-2?
I am. After the first two games, I thought this is, going to be kind of a cakewalk for Miami. I thought that Charlotte would be one of those teams that, you know, kind of, I hate to say it, almost like Boston. Great regular season, but didn't have a playoff gear. And, you know, their offense is great for, you know, racking up a few wins here and there in the regular season. But playoff time, when the other team ratchets down defense, is too much. So I tip my hat to Steve Clifford and that Charlotte team, because they got drubbed pretty good the first couple games, if I remember right. And for them to be up 3-2 now, that's pretty impressive.
I kind of had that feeling that Charlotte had that "we're just happy to be here" sort of feeling. Did you feel that with that team?
Exactly. I do. I did feel that. They were like, all right, we made it this far, and hey, we're getting our heads beat in, no biggie. But no, the pride kicked in, and I'm shocked.
Yeah, especially since the Heat, like, they have a pretty good experience advantage there, with Dwayne Wade obviously being a 3-time champion, and, you know, a lot of veterans have played in the playoffs. So I thought, you know, experience is going to win over youth. So, but right now we're going back to Game 6 in Charlotte, where the Hornets could possibly close this out. And would you call this an upset?
I mean, I think so. When you're down 0-2 and you come back and win a series, I'd have to say it's an upset. And I think here's something that maybe we didn't consider. Miami's one of the few, I can't really think of any other team, you could weigh in if you can remember a team, they shifted gears mid-season.
Yeah.
You know, like, before they got Joe Johnson, I think they were starting Whiteside, and they were slow and plodding, and they were losing a lot, and then they put Whiteside on the bench, they brought him off the bench, got to Joe Johnson, started speeding things up, started playing Josh Richardson, and voila, they were actually moving up and down the court and scoring a lot and being incredibly efficient. I've never seen that before. And maybe the team is just not used to doing that, and we're seeing that now, right?
Because they're not used to spacing the floor, because they didn't have any shooters. Joe Johnson, a legit shooter, so now they can spread the floor a little bit.
Exactly, and not just that. But look at your boy Josh Richardson today. I mean, he's been great, but he's a rookie.
Yeah.
And then you saw down the stretch, I don't know if you saw, he shot that air ball late, you know. And that's what happened, you play rookies. So it's not his fault. Hey, he's going to be great, the team's going to be fine in the future, but they're not quite used to being this team, and it shows at times, I think.
One more thing before we move on to another series. Were you shocked that Wade didn't get the call in the last seconds?
What about when Wade? You said when Wade didn't get that last that call?
Yeah, when Wade didn't get the call, yeah.
Yes, I was, but at the same time, I think those refs realized they missed that goaltend right, like, a little bit before that. When Courtney Lee went up for that layup, and even if Wade didn't hit the ball, you can't slap the backboard.
After it hits the backboard, right? You can't do that.
That's still basket interference, and that's exactly what he did. And I think the refs might have realized that game. So let's be real. Refs do makeup calls.
They do. They do.
Yeah, I think that might have been a makeup call for that. So, yeah, but I'm still shocked, man, because Dwayne Wade is still, you know, his name still rings out in the streets. He's still a big-name player. So the fact that, you know, he drove, he got the contact. But, hey, playoff basketball, man. You don't always get them in the playoff.
Yeah, still shocked, though. Dwayne Wade, 3-time champion, veteran for a long time, and still didn't get the call.
He was furious, boy.
What do you think of Cleveland finishing off Detroit in 4 games? Cleveland looked like the happiest they've been all season, really.
All right, well, I'm going to sit here, and I'm gonna stand up, and I'm saluting. You can't see right now, but I'm saluting Detroit basketball because those boys played hard. They were in every game. You know, it was a struggle for them to make it to the playoffs, but once they got there, I think they acquitted themselves quite well. That team has flaws, we know that. Red Jack has flaws, we know that. Drummond has some flaws, we know that. But the fact that every single game they were in there right till the end says so much about that team. And Stan Van Gundy's going to have those boys playing next year, man.
Yeah, one of the most competitive suites we've ever seen, really.
Definitely. I was saying the same thing. I've never seen a suite that didn't seem so much like a suite. And, they made them work for it.
So what about those Cavs? Like I said, this is the happiest they've looked all season, and this is the best the three guys have played all season, really, together.
We always know that the best thing for any team is they want to peak when the play, you know, right around the playoffs. And it seems like, you know, I think we were all maybe hyper-analyzing the Cavs a little bit this season. I know that I was part of it, too. You know, but, you know, hey, they're not playing well, they're doing this, Love's not doing this. The fact that they all came together like that in the first round means that their timing's been impeccable. They played it just right. You know, LeBron kind of cruised most of the season. They got everybody their reps, and now look at them. I still don't know if they have enough depth. I don't trust Shumpert at all. We know Tristan is going to do what he's going to do, but they still have holes there. But they're going to go to the finals. They're going to make it to the East.
Yeah. So who do you see as their biggest challenger? Obviously, there's Toronto. struggling to beat Indiana. They came back big time last night in Game 5. Obviously, Miami, if they can get through Charlotte, but I'm not sure that's going to happen now. Obviously, there's Atlanta and Boston. So who do you see as the biggest challengers for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I guess I'd say Toronto. And a quick aside, I'm pulling for the upset. I want Indiana up to Toronto just for the chaos factor.
Imagine Paul George and LeBron James all over again, right?
I would love it, man. I would love it. But I'm pretty sure that – I'm not pretty sure, but the numbers say Toronto's going to pull this one out. That's fine. Toronto, they're deep. They're physical. I think Kyle Lowry can't play any worse than he's playing now, so maybe the next round he'll get himself together.
Yeah, DeRozan woke up in Game 5.
DeRozan actually can wake up in Game 5. Now, here's an underrated aspect, though. Kyrie has been playing – he's been playing pretty decent man-to-man defense. I watched him that last game against Detroit. He was D'ing up pretty well, so.
Yeah. What about J.R. Smith? Like, he's come through in some occasions, too.
Okay. I want anyone who's listening, take a pen out, some piece of paper, dollar bill, whatever you got, okay? If you have a typewriter – if you have your computer, just open this right now and save this on a word pad on your desktop. If you are depending on J.R. Smith in tight situations, you've already lost. That's going to be my anthem every damn year. J.R. Smith, he'll look great this first round. He'll look great next round. When it comes down to it, if you don't have a lead late and you need J.R. Smith to give you buckets in the crunch, you're trying to make a comeback, you're in trouble. Until J.R. Smith proves me wrong, that's my take on J.R. Smith. Because every year, I remember with the Knicks, he played great until he elbowed, was it Crowder? No, he elbowed.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he did a backfist on Crowder. Yeah, I remember that.
I'm talking, this is a couple years ago. What did he did something a couple years ago when Garnett and them were still there. I think he elbowed Pierce, and he got ejected. And then I guess he was suspended for a game, and when he came back, he was straight garbage the rest of the playoff. Last year, he was looked good in the first couple rounds, and yeah, they were going to lose the Golden State regardless. But he was straight garbage until I think they were down really big, and he hit a couple crazy shots. That's what he does, garbage time or early in the game, he's going to be fine for me. So yeah, if you, I don't like J.R. Smith at all as a player. He's fun, but as far as a piece on a championship team, that he concerns me. So
is he a waste of talent? Like, because I've seen some people claim that he'd be a top 10 offensive player if he had his head on straight.
I think we all knew that guy on the playground who was a million-dollar talent but had a 10-cent brain, and that's just kind of J.R. Smith. And it's I don't want to call him away because the guy's been in the league for, 12 years now?
Yeah.
So he's made a career of himself, and he's always been a viable NBA player. Mm-hmm. But I think, he's one of those players that everyone kind of always thought he could be so much better if he just blanked. And he just never blanked. We all want him to be smarter. We all want him to take better shots. We all want him to focus on, maybe defending better, and which he has. I think in Cleveland's been a better defender than I thought he ever could be. But he just – that's just – hey, what we want him to be and what he is two different things.
Mm-hmm. Atlanta and Boston, I know you're pointing for your Celtics, obviously, but are the Hawks the kind of team now that you can semi-trust after being so untrustworthy before last year?
They're like a bag of those weird jelly beans, the mystery jelly beans. Because one time you look at the Hawks, and they look the same, and they're cherry and vanilla, and they're delicious. And you bite into one of those mystery jelly beans, and it's like poop flavored. You never know what you're gonna get with the Hawks from night to night, and it's weird because there's no kind of bellwether. There's no kind of like warning and say, okay, well this night. You can tell if Teague starts off well, they'll be fine. There's nothing you can tell with the Hawks. It's all about rhythm. I think Kenny Smith talked about that a lot. It's all about rhythm with them, and they get good rhythm. They're hard to stop. They start off and they're missing a few shots. They look terrible sometimes. So I actually wrote a piece about this with a couple other guys, Bo Cherney and Tyler Duke from SB Nation. Wrote a piece about how. But the Hawks, it's really just about making shots. They got to make shots. I think Coach Bud needs to shorten up his rotation a little bit. Moscow doesn't need as many minutes, even though he looked decent last night. But they have the talent. It's just all about getting them all on the same page at the same time.
Yeah, they did go to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they had the best record in the Eastern Conference last season. So I'm at that train now where it's like, well, I guess I can semi-trust them to get a little deeper into playoffs now.
I love the Hawks, and like when people were saying, hey, can Boston be the next Atlanta? I took offense for the Hawks because I think Paul Millsap is one of the most underrated players in the NBA.
He is.
I think Horford is great. Like, a lot, you know, he doesn't get his due. But the way they play sometimes, it's almost like they don't take full advantage of their talents because the system doesn't dictate they do that. Right? They move the ball, and that's good. They play the ball, they play the game the right way. But, like, I think Horford, before last night, he got 18 shots in two games. That's, you know, and they lost both those games. You gotta get your best players more shots.
Yeah. Paul Millsap scored 45 points in game four.
He's a monster, dude.
Yeah. And he had, like, what, 13 rebounds and four blocks, I think, in that game as well?
All over the place. He is a monster.
Yeah, before that, he was pretty much invisible. Like, he didn't get it going. And then suddenly Game 4 just came out, and boom.
Which is really puzzling, man, because he should be too big and strong for Crowder. He should be too talented for, you know, any other the Celtic bigs to guard him on the perimeter. But, yeah, something about it. It looks like he's playing at half speed sometimes. Somebody mentioned that to me, and I noticed it. I'm sure he's giving full effort. It's just, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I wonder if he's hurt somewhere. Because, you know, sometimes they don't disclose that.
That's true, man. Let's knock on wood and hope not, man. Because
yeah, we've
seen enough players get injured this playoff run. It kind of sucks.
Right. Did you think Isaiah Thomas was going to get this good? Or do you already know that he was this good? Average 22 points this season. All-star. Basically, like, killed him in game four. 5'8". Like, he's a monster out there.
Okay, so this is my thing, man. I respect what he does, and I did not know he'd be this good. I knew he was a spark off the bench, but now as a starter, he's surprising. I think he averaged 22-7. Those are amazing numbers. But again, he's 5'9". He shoots like 40% from the floor. That volume shooting thing works when you have a system just like this. He's in the perfect situation. So many players are in the perfect situation in Boston, and it's like a perfect storm, and it works, and it's great. But I mean, that playoff gear is a real thing. Where some teams, like, look at Cleveland right now. They hit that playoff gear. They're on another level. The best teams have a playoff gear. I don't know if Boston has that, because Boston still goes to those stretches where they just can't make a shot. Or if you know, like as Atlanta showed you, you cut the head off. You don't let Isaiah get loose. They're kind of in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, they trapped Isaiah in Game 5, and look what happened. They got blown out.
Exactly. So I mean, it's I guess my thing as a Celtics fan is, this is all well and good, but, you know, it's the first round. They won 48 games in the first round, and, you know, they might get to the second round. We'll see. I want to see excellence. I want to see contending status, and we're pretty far away from that. So I get a little frustrated sometimes.
Do you think Boston can win a championship? Like, I'm sure you're going to pick up pieces later on, but would you want Isaiah Thomas as your number one option?
To win a championship? No, that's impossible.
Okay.
It's impossible. Okay. I love his game. He would have to be the second or third option, and we'd have to get some real deal talent in there for that to happen. So.
Okay, great. So I just saw, while watching this Warriors-Rockets game, they just handed Steve Kerr the trophy to Coach of the Year, and he should have highlighted about that. And I know I watched you kind of debate that with a few people about Steve Kerr winning the award. So, and I'm probably pretty much in agreement with you on this, but yeah, Steve Kerr missed 43 games.
That's all you have to say. That's all you got to say. I get it. He's done a great job of instilling all the great offense. He's built a culture there. I get it. That was all last season. He missed the first 43 freaking games. Yeah. And people are like, oh, well, his influence. So they make an influencer of the year award. Give him that. Because the year means you've coached. And just because, you know, it's funny, people, well, technically, the wins go on his record, so he did coach. Well, technically then, how about this? You do all the work at your job, and let somebody else come and say, hey, yeah, I taught him all this stuff, so give me the awards, give me the recognition. That's not how it works. The coach was freaking Luke Walton. He was the coach for the first 43 games. I don't care, yes, he had input, yes, Kerr had input, yes, he was around practices late, but for the first, like, you know, he was recovering from major back surgery.
Yeah.
So it's fine. He got it. It just kind of irked me. It kind of, you know,
You know what's funny is that Luke Walton got votes too, and that's what I found silly. It's like, okay, wait a minute. So if Luke Walton can get votes, like,
thank you.
How come he didn't get more then? Like, what? Or How come they just couldn't make it like, oh, we can only vote for one team, so both coaches get the award or something?
That's what's so funny to me. That people use the argument, well, technically, they all go, and so Kerr was, well, guess what? The other guy got votes, too, so your arguments are nonsense. So, yeah, I don't think he deserved it. He's a great coach, but when you miss that many games, it should have went to somebody who coached, you know, all season.
I'm going to be so mad when this show wins Podcast Episode of the Year, and then you get the credit.
I hope so. And I taught him everything he knows, you know. I was giving him input through the whole, We'll say like both are ours. Just keep it in my house.
So the other awards, Defensive Player of the Year, Kawhi Leonard, that's pretty much a gimme, right? Like, there's no other real candidate there.
People are going to say Dre, and Dre... Yeah, he was definitely there too. But and you know what? Somebody else raised a good point. Well, did you complain when Kawhi missed 22 games? Well, I don't really care because I think he's that good of a defender.
Well, that was last year though, wasn't it? Where he missed 22 games?
Well, yeah, but that's what they were saying. Did you complain when he missed 22 games and won Defensive Player of the Year? I'm like, no, whatever. So, but yeah, I don't have a problem. Kawhi is. I kind of worry about Kevin Durant next round, man. I want to see him succeed and have a good showing, and Kawhi really can lock up. So he's amazing. I take him over Dre. Dre's a better, I think, maybe a better team defender. But if you're just talking about straight up, you know, throwing on somebody, you can't beat Kawhi.
Improved player, CJ McCollum from Portland Trailblazers. And a lot of people called that out, actually. It's like, oh, yeah, CJ's going to win most improved simply because he's going to get a lot of minutes. But he did triple his scoring when he doubled his minutes. So what about that?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't mad about that at all. That's fine. And you know what? It's funny. All these awards, I really don't give a crap. It's just like sometimes it's the principal involved. Like with Coach of the Year, it's just the principal. The guy missed work for the game.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, for Coach of the Year, usually when you win it, you're going to get fired in, like, the next few years or so.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Steve Kerr will be gone.
Is this breaking news? Ray, are you telling me that... information?
Maybe 2 years from now, Steve Kerr is only going to win 59 games. He'll be fired.
Wow, sources.
I don't think.
Sources. I got you. I'm going to make sure I write an article about it. You're my source.
Yeah, and then and I put all the influences, so I'm going to win that article of the year.
Damn it!
Yeah. So, what are you looking forward to in the playoffs? I mean, so far. By my count, 13 of 36 games have all ended in single digits. 23 games were 10 points or more.
Did that pass?
That's insane, yeah.
Yeah, you remember that first round we had, was it a couple years ago? The first round we had a couple years ago that was just so amazing?
Where it's like nearly every series had like four series had like seven games, right?
Something like that, but yeah, it was so many buzzer beaters and game winners at the buzzer and overtime games. That was amazing. Yeah, the first round has been kind of a drag. The injuries just made it even a little more depressing. But we got some good. I'm looking forward to Westbrook versus. I'm looking forward to Durant versus Kawhi.
Kawhi, yeah,
definitely looking forward to that. If anybody knows me, they know I'm a big Westbrook fan. So I just want to see him wreck shop. They have an outside chance to beat San Antonio. I know San Antonio's the favorite, but I want to see him and Durant actually just kind of get into grooves and go off and make things really tough for San Antonio.
Is San Antonio the favorite overall now to win the title?
I was talking about this with Jesse Blanchard over on Twitter, and I want to say yes, but the problem is, let's say the Clippers are going to come back and beat, or the Clippers are going to beat, I'm sorry, not the Clippers, Portland's going to beat the Clippers, probably. I think so. Six or seven games. You're giving more and more time to Steph to get ready and to get back. I think that even as is right now, the Warriors can beat Portland. So now you're going to say, all right, by the end of that series, if Steph's back to 100%, I mean, then Golden State's going to kind of keep on rolling. That's a big if, though. They're narrow so much. Their margin's so much smaller now. So I would say yes. As of right now, I think San Antonio has to be considered the favorite. They're healthy. They're rested. This is right where Pop wanted to be, you know, when he started resting players and got LaMarcus Aldridge. Healthy, rested, 100% ready to go. So, yeah, they're the favorites.
Let's not forget, they did win 67 games, which is, like, incredible, no matter what season. Incredible. 67 wins.
It's amazing, man. You know what? Even though we talk about it, as NBA heads, we all talk about the Spurs, but they've really been under the radar, man. Even when we talk about them, it's kind of like, and don't forget the Spurs are right there, too. And
yeah.
You know, it's just like, and Kawhi is really great. And then we talk about, you know, every other team. So they've really been under the radar, and it's if they come out, if they win a championship, no one should be surprised.
The thing is, it's like, in terms of excellence, it's like people say that the Spurs are like the New England Patriots, if this were the NFL. But the thing is, though, the Patriots are always in the forefront, whereas the Spurs, nobody talks about them, no matter what.
It's weird, right? And
yeah.
I think, like you said, we take it for granted. They, you know, 50 wins for how many years is it now? 18, 17, 16 in a row?
And the only reason why they didn't win 50 games that year is because it was a lockout, like 1999. That was the only reason.
Exactly. So I think we take them for granted how excellent they've been. And they're just, you know, they don't brag. They don't beat their chest. They don't, you know, there's nobody in the forefront. They're all just, they put their head down, they do their work. And hey man, we got to give credit to Poppin' Company.
Yeah. I believe they have made the playoffs 26 in the last 27 seasons.
That's insane.
That's crazy, right?
That's insane.
Yeah. So, James, before I let you go, before you plug your stuff, what's next for you, man? Like, you made it to ESPN. You've been writing very frequently at bballbreakdown.com. So what's next for you?
It's funny, man. I actually just started really, really hitting it hard. And it's, you know, we're having fun out there. We're doing our thing at bball. I'm the lazy guy at bballbreakdown.com. You guys, all you listeners, go check them out, man. Those guys are a lot smarter and a lot more prolific than I am. A lot of good content over there. So everybody, you guys, please check it out. But yeah, man, I'm just covering games. I love to. I don't know. Maybe I'll start podcasting again and get you on my show.
All right, cool. I just want to say that I've known you for 5 years, and I've watched your growth from just like, hey, so I just got to know you. I want to go on your podcast. You know, that kind of thing. But then you've grown into a great analyst, a great writer, and most of all, a great friend. So, you know, thanks again for coming on the podcast, and we'll see you again soon, all right?
Oh, man. Thanks for having me on, man. It's been a long ride. I'm glad I've been on it with you, bro. I got to come up here and buy you a drink one day.
We'll do it again soon, all right?
All right, my man.
Cool. All right.
This is Robert Littow from the world's most dangerous website, Black Sports Online, and I want you to check out Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast. It's the best in the business. It's not none of that BS. It's all about keeping it real and keeping it authentic. So definitely check it out.
The very first time that I saw your brown eyes, your lips said hello and I said hi. I knew right then you were the one. But I was caught up in physical attraction. But to my satisfaction, baby, you were more than just a face. And if I
ever fall
in love
again,
I will be sure
that the lady is a friend.
And if I
ever fall
in love
so true,
I will be sure
that the lady's just like you.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. EJ Christian from the Earnestly Speaking Podcast and the Ha Ha Hoops Podcast as well. How's it going, my man?
I'm doing good. Can't complain. Just, you know, it's a little late night podcast with us. We're recording late night, so.
As always, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love these podcasts. These podcasts are fun.
What's missing, I think, these days is, like, I mean, I'm sure there's a couple good black comedies out there on network TV, but in the 90s, it was all about Martin.
Martin.
Martin Lawrence. And yeah, it was actually one of the shows that I used to watch like every Thursday or whatever that was. I think it was Thursday.
But, I believe it was on Sundays actually. When the first debut, anyway, maybe on syndication was Thursday, but I knew the show was on Sundays as part of the Sunday lineup next to a Living Color and a couple other shows I used to see, play back in the early 90s.
In Living Color, fantastic.
That's another one.
But the thing is, it's like when growing up as a teenager and whatnot, like I got into music first because of 90s R&B. So some people don't know that because everyone knows I'm all about pop or whatever. But
were you
a shy fan?
Were you a shy fan?
Oh, big time. Big time.
Baby, I'm yours if you want me.
And I'll be your comforter. So here's the thing. So back then, I would seek basically about every kind of like black entertainment out there when I was a teenager because I was so big into R&B. And Martin was obviously one of the shows I watched a lot. So, and I just found the character so colorful. Martin Lawrence would dress up as like, you know, he was basically doing the Eddie Murphy where he would dress up as like, you know, whoever, like Roscoe and Shanae and Jerome. Oh my God, it was so great. And it was just fun. It was just a fun show. My favorite character in that show though was Cole.
Cole was an idiot.
Exactly. That's why I love Cole. Yeah.
Yeah. That show was great because it was actually, you remember that show came out right at the end of the Cosby era. Like I think Martin came out in 91, maybe 92, and Cosby ended in 92. So that was kind of the bridge between the Cosby era. You remember Fresh Prince had just started about a year or two before that.
Right.
So I think the 90s of black comedy was actually huge. I mean, there were some really good shows. Martin, in a lot of ways, even though it's very this is going to sound very strange, right? But Martin, in a lot of ways, even though it's very popular, and Martin Lawrence obviously is a very popular comedian, as that show has been distanced itself for the last 20 years, that show has become a little more underrated now.
Right. No, it's funny because, like, you know, my timeline is full of NBA fans. A lot of them are black or whatever. And a lot of them are our age group. But I hardly see a mention of Martin. Why is that?
I think what happened is as you start, especially in the late 90s when there was so many black African-American shows on network television.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin, I think, ended somewhere between 97, 98, maybe. I believe I don't have the exact year in front of me. I think with so many black shows on television, not saying that it's better than Martin, but Martin gets lost, I think, after a while. It gets, like, muddles a little tack. And I think a lot of it, you know, that's why I think it became underrated. Like, now today, look at Martin today, like, you can really appreciate that show now more than you did maybe, like, 20 years ago because it was really authentic comedy. I mean, it was really good at the sketches they were doing, the costumes. I mean, obviously, the character change they did, you know, Martin did with Shanae and, you know, Roscoe and whatnot, and just the overall, you know, relationship between Gina and then Martin, you know, was great. I mean, that show, to me, now is underrated. I love Martin. I mean, that's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, it was over the top. Jerome in the house. Like, I love Jerome, too.
Yeah.
And we never knew what Tommy was actually, like, what was his job for a long, long time. Like, I know they revealed it, like, later in the show, but for a long time, we didn't know what Tommy was doing. And he was actually, like, the most level-headed of everybody, which is kind of hilarious, too. Because, you know, like, he was kind of a mysterious guy.
Yeah, that cast is really, really underrated, too. Like, the show's underrated, especially, but that cast, the supporting cast, Cole and the other guy, and, I don't know what the names are hitting me right now, but this supporting cast, outside Gina and Martin, you know, the supporting cast is great. I thought they played their role. They fit the show and to where it fit. It was just right. It was a great marriage of the cast, and I thought they did a tremendous job. And like I said, that show is so underrated, man. It really is. Like I own all the seasons, obviously. But I haven't watched it in a long time. Now through the podcast, now I kind of want to go back and do the whole marathon now.
Yeah, the thing is, it's like, while it's a great black comedy, it's like, I never really felt like, you know, like they went to the lowest common denominator with that. Like, they didn't go like, oh, black this, black that, whatever, you know? It was just funny.
Yeah, and it was funny, it was, I don't know what to call it, raunchy? Like, it wasn't mm-hmm. raunchy to the point where it was disrespectful, but it was adult enough to where you can get it, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. it wasn't as positive as Cosby was, but I don't think Martin was a negative show either. I didn't think Martin was more of a funny show, meant for you to laugh. It was not offensive, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, just fun. Yeah. And see, people forget this, but couple sayings are from that show, from Martin. Damn, Gina. Like, people don't know that it came from that show. And you go, girl. Like, that's from Martin. And people don't even remember that anymore.
Oh, you so crazy.
You so crazy. Yeah, that one too. Like, they don't remember these things anymore. I'm so bummed that Martin doesn't get mentioned enough on our timelines on Twitter or whatever. Like, you know, we kind of need to bring that back or something.
Right. Ray, it was the cast members. I want to get this right here. The cast members were Tommy, Cole. What was the girl's name again? The other girl? Gina.
Pamela. Pam. Pam and Gina.
Right, Pam. Dude, yeah. I think the dynamic between Pam and Mark was the funniest. Because they hate each other, but they love each other. Like, they hate each other, but it was like, they kind of sort of like, you know, put up with each other just because they knew the dynamic was with Gina. Gina was the center between those mm-hmm. two. So, but I thought the Pam Martin dynamic was probably the highlight of the show. Just because his girlfriend's best friend, and you know, and I hate you, and like, please, and I mean, it was just the dynamic of those two was phenomenal.
Yeah, there was tension there, definitely. Yeah, and again, like. There's the characters are so colorful, and Martin, again, like, we go back to Shanae, Roscoe, and Jerome, and I'm sure he did a few more, too. Like, it's just funny. Like, and of course, you know, we can't forget he was in a radio station called What's Up as well. Yeah.
The DJ, his boss, what's his name again? Do you remember his name?
I think it's Stan. I'm not sure. I think it might be Stan.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was funny as hell.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's
been on the show a lot. He was on the show enough, in my opinion. I thought he needed to get him more lines in that show.
The funny thing is that, like, he would say some raunchy things that are just, like, just so awesome. It's like cool, some cool one-liners or whatever.
You know why, right? Because he's so old. Like, that's the only thing I'm looking forward to when I get old. Like, when I get old, it's like a free pass. Say what the fuck you want. Seriously, no offense. Talking about language, but that's like the one free pass where you can sit here and say, I can say it, and no one's going to say anything to me because I'm old, and I'm supposed to be stupid and rash. That's the one thing I want to say. I think he played that part just right.
Yeah, when you're like 75 and you're talking about like going to the bathroom, and it's like, oh my god, I left some toilet paper outside. Hold on, or whatever. It's like, oh, what the hell are you doing in the toilet?
Right.
You know,
that's the occasion, right? I mean, I think TV One still plays Martin, right? I believe.
I'm sorry, what is it?
I think Martin's still in syndication, right? It's still being syndicated, right?
I think so. Yeah. But man, it just gets so buried under shows like Moesha and in the House or whatever. And obviously, Fresh Prince. It's like it gets buried under there. Like,
Fresh Prince, I understand. Fresh Prince is a classic. I mean, Fresh Prince is one of the greatest comedies of all time.
It's its own legend. Yeah.
I feel like I guess Moesha to some degree, maybe, but Martin should not be under those other shows. I mean. If I gave you, like, top-tier, all-time African-American TV shows of all time, obviously, mm-hmm. you're looking at Fresh Prince, you're looking at Cosby, you're looking at The Jefferson. Mm-hmm. I guess The Different World would be in that top tier also, of shows that were, you know, top tier African American shows. And I
how was 227?
227?
Yeah.
Do you consider Different Strokes a black show? Because it was mixed. It was a black kid, but
yeah, it's a mixture. That's true. I don't really know, but that's fine, I guess.
Martin has to be on top. Like, if I give like a top five black shows all time, Martin's got to be like somewhere in that 5 or 6 range. He's got to be definitely not. Mm-hmm. If not a top tier, definitely second tier of greatest black shows of all time.
Who could forget the breakup episode that went, actually went 2 episodes? By the way, Lisa Turtle was part of that.
Yeah, we'll figure.
when Martin's saying, you mentioned Shy, Martin's saying, if I ever fall in love. And then the following episode, he's saying, I will always love you, and it was the greatest thing ever.
and they actually dated in real life, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think they did. Although I also think it ended badly too, from what I heard.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And only that. In fact, I mean, Offset, Gita, Keisha Campbell, and Martin Lawrence, they didn't get along either on the show at the end. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, there was some allegations of that Martin allegedly was physical towards Gita at one point, or something like that to that extent.
Yeah.
Something like that. So it was the show didn't really end on a good note in terms of some of the things that happened offset. So it's really sad to see that, unfortunately. But there was a rumor last year that we I think you and I discussed this too last year, that Mort was going to come back that show.
I heard fleeting, but it never became concrete from what I know. So
right, but it was never followed up though. Somebody said it was coming back and. There was even like a piece, an article that came out about that. Actually, mm-hmm. A few articles came out about that. They followed up with it, but nothing came of it after that. Last summer, I think it was. I heard it.
I mean, I would like to see a comeback, as long as it's still the full cast. But that's probably gonna be impossible at this point.
Well, that's the thing though. Like, if they come back, where do you go with that show? I mean, you're talking 20 something years later. Full House made sense because mm-hmm. there were kids involved. Those kids became bigger. Like there were no other seeds of that show. Unless you're going to tell me that Martin and Gina had a baby, you know, at some point. And I don't know where that show goes. Like the only way you can really make those kind of shows make sense again is it's got to be a bridge between one generation and the next. Like Full House.
There's gonna be a next generation. Yeah, like Boy Meets World has now Girl Meets World. It's their daughter.
It's the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Go ahead.
I don't know what to do with that. I don't know what to do with that with the Martin. I that's not what shows like that too. With shows like you initially get excited because it's coming back because you think it's coming back. But you gotta remember these shows are like Martin's like 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, is that going to work? I mean, really looking at it logically, is that really going to work? I mean, it was good for its time because it fit that period. But unless you have something, a new friend, I mean, I'm on a scriptwriter. Like, I can't really claim that I know what direction to go in that show. But I just, like, now that I've actually sat down and looked at it logically, I don't know where that show would go if it came back. I don't know where you go with that show, honestly.
Yeah, and you mentioned like they had to have kids or something just to keep the thing going, but I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that's how shows spin off, you know. Like you mentioned, Cosby Show, The Different World. So, I don't know where to go from here. But what we do know is that you're right. Martin is underrated. It's hilarious as hell. You know, some of the jokes may be dated by now, but still, it's just funny and it's a fun show. And you know, again, they didn't go to the lowest common denominator. It's just. You know, they may be all African American, most of them, but it was just funny. That's all I got. So, you know, Martin is probably like a really underrated show at this moment. Hopefully, people appreciate it more as the years go by.
Yeah, I think you know, initially, like the last show this year, I thought it would be great to come back. But you know what? I think it's good where it's at now. I think if Martin comes back now, it wouldn't be as funny. It wouldn't be as just because of the. I don't know if it's fixed the era. I don't think people appreciate it. That's why.
Yeah. Oh, well. We'll always have, damn, Gina, and you go,
and
girl.
Shanae. And Shanae.
And Shanae.
Shanae was a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. You so crazy. Thanks, EJ.
Thank you, Ray. Game over,
yeah! Hashtag blame Ray Ray.
Moded.